This is Audible.
Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One. By Dr. Joe Dispenza. New York Times best-selling author of You Are the Placebo, dedicated to Roby. Read by Adam Boyce. Copyright 2012 by Joe Dispenza. Introduction. The greatest habit you can ever break is the habit of being yourself. When I think about all the books on creating the life we desire, I realize that many of us are still looking for approaches that are grounded in sound scientific evidence, methods that truly work. But already, new research into the brain and body, the mind and consciousness, and a quantum leap in our understanding of physics is suggesting expanded possibilities on how to move toward what we innately know is our real potential. As a practicing chiropractor who runs a busy, integrated health clinic, and as an educator in the fields of neuroscience, brain function, biology, and brain chemistry, I have been privileged to be on the forefront of some of this research. Not just by studying the fields mentioned above, but also by observing the effects of this new science once applied by common people like you and me. That's the moment when the possibilities of this new science become reality. As a consequence, I have witnessed some remarkable changes in individuals' health and quality of life when they truly change their minds. Over the last several years, I've had the opportunity to interview a host of people who overcame significant health conditions that were considered either terminal or permanent. Per the contemporary model of medicine, these recoveries were labeled spontaneous remissions. However, upon my extensive examination of their inner journeys, it became apparent to me that there was a strong element of mind involved. And their physical changes weren't so spontaneous after all. This discovery furthered my postgraduate studies in brain imaging, neuroplasticity, epigenetics, and psychoneuroimmunology. I simply figured that something had to be happening in the brain and body that could be zeroed in on and then replicated. In this book, I want to share some of what I learned along the way and show you, by exploring how mind and matter are interrelated, how you can apply these principles not only to your body, but to any aspect of your life. Many readers of my first book, Evolve Your Brain, The Science of Changing Your Mind, voiced the same honest and heartfelt request, along with a fair amount of positive feedback, such as the person who wrote, "I really liked your book. I read it twice. It had lots of science and was very thorough and inspiring. But can you tell me how to do it? How do I evolve my brain?" In response, I began teaching a workshop series on the practical steps anyone can take to make changes at the level of mind and body that will lead to lasting results. Consequently, I have seen people experience unexplainable healings, release old mental and emotional wounds, resolve so-called impossible difficulties, create new opportunities, and experience wonderful wealth, just to name a few. You will meet some of those people in these pages. It's not necessary that you read my first book to digest the material in this one. But if you have been exposed to my work, I wrote Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself to serve as a practical, how-to companion to evolve your brain. It is my earnest objective to make this new book simple and easy to understand. There will be times, though, that I will have to give you bits of knowledge to act as the forerunner to a concept I want to develop. The purpose is to build a realistic working model of personal transformation that will help you understand how we can change. Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself is a product of one of my passions, a sincere effort to demystify the mystical, so that every person understands that we have within our reach all we need to make significant changes in our lives. This is a time when not only do we want to know, but we want to know how. How do we apply and personalize both emerging scientific concepts and age-old wisdom to succeed at living a more enriched life? When you and I can connect the dots of what science is discovering about the nature of reality, and when we give ourselves permission to apply those principles in our day-to-day existence, then each of us becomes both a mystic and a scientist in our own life. So I invite you to experiment with everything that you learn in this book and to objectively observe the results. What I mean is that if you make the effort to change your inner world of thoughts and feelings, your external environment should begin to give you feedback to show you that your mind has had an effect on your outer world. Why else would you do it? If you take intellectual information that you learn as a philosophy and then initiate that knowledge into your life by applying it enough times until you master it, you will ultimately move from being a philosopher to an initiate to a master. Stay tuned. There is sound scientific evidence that this is possible. I do ask you up front to keep an open mind so that we can build step by step the concepts I outline in this book. All of this information is for you to do something with. Otherwise, it's just good dinner conversation, isn't it? Once you can open your mind to the way things really are and let go of your conditioned beliefs with which you are accustomed to framing reality, you should see the fruits of your efforts. That is my wish for you. The information in these pages is there to inspire you, to prove to yourself that you are a divine creator. We should never wait for science to give us permission to do the uncommon. If we do, then we are turning science into another religion. We should be brave enough to contemplate our lives, do what we thought was outside the box, and do it repeatedly. When we do that, we are on our way to a greater level of personal power. True empowerment comes when we start to look deeply at our beliefs. We may find their roots in the conditioning of religion, culture, society, education, family, the media, and even our genes, the latter being imprinted by the sensory experiences of our current lives, as well as untold generations. Then we weigh those old ideas against some new paradigms that may serve us better. Times are changing. As individuals awaken to a greater reality, we are part of a much larger sea change. Our current systems and models of reality are breaking down, and it is time for something new to emerge. Across the board, our models for politics, economics, religion, science, education, medicine, and our relationship with the environment are all showing a different landscape than just 10 years ago. Letting go of the outmoded and embracing the new sounds easy. But as I pointed out in Evolve Your Brain, much of what we have learned and experienced has been incorporated into our biological self, and we wear it like a garment. But we also know that what is true today might not be true tomorrow. Just as we have come to question our perception of atoms as solid pieces of matter, reality and our interaction with it is a progression of ideas and beliefs. We also know that to leave the familiar life that we have grown accustomed to and waltz into something new is like a salmon swimming upstream. It takes effort. And frankly, it's uncomfortable. And to top it off, ridicule, marginalization, opposition and denigration from those who cling to what they think they know greet us along the way. Who with such an unconventional bent is willing to meet such adversity in the name of some concept they cannot embrace with their senses, yet which is alive in their minds? How many times in history have individuals who were considered heretics and fools, and thus took the abuse of the unexceptional, emerged as geniuses, saints, or masters? Will you dare to be an original? It seems that human nature is such that we balk at changing until things get really bad, and we're so uncomfortable that we can no longer go on with business as usual. This is as true for an individual as it is for a society. We wait for crisis, trauma, loss, disease, and tragedy before we get down to looking at who we are, what we're doing, how we're living, what we're feeling, and what we believe or know in order to embrace true change. Often it takes a worst-case scenario for us to begin making changes that support our health, relationships, career, family, and future. My message is, why wait? We can learn and change in a state of pain and suffering, or we can evolve in a state of joy and inspiration. Most embrace the former. To go with the latter, we just have to make up our minds that change will probably entail a bit of discomfort, some inconvenience, a break from a predictable routine, and a period of not knowing. Most of us are already familiar with the temporary discomfort of not knowing. We stumbled through our early efforts to read until this skill became second nature. When we first practiced the violin or the drums, our parents wished they could send us to a soundproof room. Pity the hapless patient who has his blood drawn by a medical student who has the requisite knowledge but still lacks the finesse that she will only gain through practice. Absorbing knowledge, knowing, and then gaining practical experience by applying what you learned until a particular skill becomes ingrained in you, knowing how, is probably how you acquired most of the abilities that now feel like part of your being, knowingness. In much the same way, learning how to change your life involves knowledge and the application of that knowledge. That is why this book is divided into three overarching sections. Throughout parts 1 and 2, I will build ideas in sequence, forming a bigger and broader model of understanding for you to personalize. If some ideas seem repetitive, they are there to remind you about something I don't want you to forget. Repetition reinforces the circuits in your brain and forms more neural connections, so that in your weakest hour, you don't talk yourself out of greatness. When you ease into part 3 of the book with a sound knowledge base, you can experience for yourself the truth of what you learned earlier. Part 1, The Science of You. Our exploration will start with an overview of philosophical and scientific paradigms related to the latest research about the nature of reality, who you are, why change has been so difficult for so many, and what is possible for you as a human being. Part 1 will be an easy read, I promise. Chapter 1, The Quantum You, introduces you to a bit of quantum physics. But don't be alarmed. I start there because it is important that you begin to embrace the concept that your subjective mind has an effect on your objective world. The observer effect in quantum physics states that where you direct your attention is where you place your energy. As a consequence, you affect the material world, which, by the way, is made mostly of energy. If you entertain that idea even for a moment, you might start focusing on what you want instead of what you don't want. And you might even find yourself thinking, if an atom is 99.99999% energy, and 0.00001% physical substance, then I'm actually more nothing than something. So why do I keep my attention on that small percentage of the physical world when I'm so much more? Is defining my present reality by what I perceive with my senses the biggest limitation I have? In chapter 2 through 4, we will look at what it means to change, to become greater than the environment, the body and time. You've probably entertained the idea that your thoughts create your life, but in Chapter 2, Overcoming the Environment, I discuss how if you allow the outer world to control how you think and feel, your external environment is patterning circuits in your brain to make you think equal to everything familiar to you. The result is that you create more of the same. You hardwire your brain to reflect the problems, personal conditions and circumstances in your life. So to change, you must be greater than all the things in your physical life. Chapter 3, Overcoming the Body, continues to look at how we unconsciously live by a set of memorized behaviors, thoughts and emotional reactions, all running like computer programs behind the scenes of our conscious awareness. That's why it is not enough to think positive, because most of who we are might reside subconsciously as negativity in the body. By the end of this book, you will know how to enter into the operating system of the subconscious mind and make permanent changes where those programs exist. Chapter 4, Overcoming Time, examines how we either live in the anticipation of future events or repeatedly revisit past memories, or both, until the body begins to believe it is living in a time other than the present moment. The latest research supports the notion that we have a natural ability to change the brain and body by thought alone, so that it looks biologically like some future event has already happened. Because you can make thought more real than anything else, you can change who you are from brain cell to gene, given the right understanding. When you learn how to use your attention and access the present, you will enter through the door to the quantum field, where all potentials exist. Chapter 5, Survival vs. Creation, illustrates the distinction between living in survival and living in creation. Living in survival entails living in stress and functioning as a materialist, believing that the outer world is more real than the inner world. When you are under the gun of the fight-or-flight nervous system, being run by its cocktail of intoxicating chemicals, you are programmed to be concerned only about your body, the things or people in your environment, and your obsession with time. Your brain and body are out of balance. You are living a predictable life. However, when you are truly living in the elegant state of creation, you are no body, no thing, no time. You forget about yourself. You become pure consciousness, free from the chains of the identity that needs the outer reality to remember who it thinks it is. Part 2, Your Brain and Meditation. In Chapter 6, Three Brains, Thinking to Doing to Being, you will embrace the concept that you have three brains that allow you to move from thinking to doing to being. Even better, when you focus your attention to the exclusion of your environment, your body and time, you can easily move from thinking to being without having to do anything. In that state of mind, your brain does not distinguish between what is happening in the outer world of reality and what is happening in the inner world of your mind. Thus, if you can mentally rehearse a desired experience via thought alone, you will experience the emotions of that event before it is physically manifested. Now you are moving into a new state of being because your mind and body are working as one. When you begin to feel like some potential future reality is happening to you in the moment that you are focusing on it, you are rewriting your automatic habits, attitudes, and other unwanted subconscious programs. Chapter 7, The Gap, explores how to break free from the emotions that you've memorized, which have become your personality, and how to close the gap between who you really are in your inner, private world and how you appear in the outer social world. We all reach a certain point when we stop learning and realize that nothing external can take away those feelings from our past. If you can predict the feeling of every experience in your life, there is no room for anything new to occur, because you are viewing your life from the past instead of the future. This is the juncture point where the soul either breaks free or falls into oblivion. You will learn to liberate your energy in the form of emotions and thus narrow the gap between how you appear and who you are. Ultimately, you will create transparency. When how you appear is who you are truly free. Part 2 concludes with Chapter 8, Meditation, Demystifying the Mystical and Waves of Your Future, in which my purpose is to demystify meditation so that you know what you're doing and why. Discussing brainwave technology made simple, I show you how your brain changes electromagnetically when you are focused versus when you are in an aroused state due to stresses in your life. You will learn that the true purpose of meditation is to get beyond the analytical mind and enter into the subconscious mind so that you can make real and permanent changes. If you get up from meditation as the same person who sat down, nothing has happened to you on any level. When you meditate and connect to something greater, you can create and then memorize such coherence between your thoughts and feelings that nothing in your outer reality, no thing, no person, no condition at any time or place, could move you from that level of energy. Now you are mastering your environment, your body, and time. Part 3. Stepping towards your new destiny. All the information in parts 1 and 2 is provided in order to equip you with the necessary knowledge, so that when you demonstrate, apply this information in part 3, which supplies the how-to, you will have a direct experience of what you've been taught. Part 3 is all about applying yourself in an actual discipline, a mindful exercise to use in your daily life. It's a step-by-step meditation process created so that you can actually do something with the theories given to you. By the way, did your mind balk when I mentioned that multi-step process? If so, it's not what you think. Yes, you will learn a sequence of actions, but soon you will experience them as one or two simple steps. After all, you probably perform multiple actions every time you prepare to drive your car. For example, you adjust the seat, put on your seatbelt, check the mirrors, start the car, turn on the headlights, look around, use a turn signal, apply the brake, put the car in drive or reverse, apply pressure to the gas pedal, and so on. Ever since you learned to drive, you have executed this procedure easily and automatically. I assure you, the same will be true once you learn each step in part 3. You may be asking yourself, why do I need to read parts 1 and 2? I'll just jump to part 3. I know I'd probably be thinking the same. I decided to offer the relevant knowledge in the first two parts of the text so that when you get to the third section, nothing will be left to conjecture, dogma, or speculation. When you begin the steps of the meditation, you'll know exactly what you're doing and why. When you comprehend the what and the why, the more you will know, and thus the more you will know how when the time comes. Therefore, you will have more power and intention behind the practical experience of truly changing your mind. By using the steps in part 3, you may be more prone to accept your innate ability to change so-called impossible situations in your life. You might even give yourself permission to entertain potential realities you never considered prior to your exposure to these new concepts. You might just begin to do the uncommon. That is my aim for you by the time you finish this book. So if you can resist the temptation to jump ahead to part 3, I promise that when you get there, you'll be quite empowered by what you learn. I've seen this approach work throughout the world in the series of 3 workshops I lead. When people gain the right knowledge in such a way that they understand it completely, and then have the opportunity for effective instruction to apply what they comprehend, Then, like magic, they can see the fruits of their efforts in the form of changes that serve as feedback in their lives. Part 3 will give you the meditative skills to change something within your mind and body and to produce an effect outside of you. Once you can notice what you did inside of you that produced an outcome outside of you, you'll do it again. When a new experience manifests in your life, you'll embrace the energy you feel in the form of an elevated emotion, such as empowerment, awe, or immense gratitude, and that energy will drive you to do it again and again. Now, you are on the path to true evolution. Each meditation step delineated in Part 3 is associated with a piece of meaningful information presented earlier in the book. Because you will have cultivated the meaning behind exactly what you're doing, there should be no ambiguity that might cause you to lose your vision. Like many skills you've learned, in the beginning it may take all of your conscious effort to stay focused as you learn how to meditate to evolve your brain. In the process, you must restrain yourself from the typical behaviors and maintain your thoughts on what you're doing without wandering to extraneous stimuli so your actions are aligned with your intention. Just as you might have experienced when you first learned to cook Thai food, play golf, dance the salsa, or drive a stick shift, the newness of the endeavor will require you to practice this ability continually, training both mind and body to memorize each step. Remember, most types of instruction are formatted in bite-sized chunks so that the mind and body can begin to work together. Once you get it, all of the individual steps you kept reviewing merge into one smooth process. The methodical, linear approach seamlessly flows into a holistic, effortless, unified demonstration. This is the point of personal ownership. At times, the effort this takes can be tedious, but if you persist with a certain amount of will and energy, in time, you'll enjoy the results. When you know that you know how to do something, you're on your way to mastering it. I'm overjoyed to say that many people around the world are already using the knowledge in this book to make demonstrable changes in their lives. It is my sincere passion that you, too, break the habit of being yourself and create the new life you desire. Let's get started. Part 1. The Science of You. Chapter 1. The Quantum You. Early physicists divided the world into matter and thought, and later, matter and energy. Each member of those pairs was considered to be entirely separate from the other. But they're not. Nevertheless, this mind-matter duality shaped our early world view, that reality was essentially predetermined, and that people could do little to change things through their own actions, let alone their thoughts. Fast forward to our current understanding, that we are part of a vast, invisible field of energy which contains all possible realities and responds to our thoughts and our feelings. Just as today's scientists are exploring the relationship between thought and matter, we're eager to do the same in our own lives. And so we ask ourselves, can I use my mind to create my reality? If so, is that a skill that we can learn and use to become who we want to be and to create the life we want to experience? Let's face it, none of us is perfect. Whether we'd like to make some change to our physical self, emotional self, or spiritual self, we all have the same desire. We want to live life as an idealized version of who we think and believe we can be. When we stand in front of the mirror and look at our love handles, we don't just see that slightly too pudgy vision reflected in the glass. We also see, depending on our mood that day, a slimmer, fitter version of ourselves, or a heavier, chunkier version. Which of our images is real? When we lie in bed at night reviewing our day and our efforts to be a more tolerant, less reactive person. We don't just see the parent who lashed out at our child for failing to quietly and quickly submit to a simple request. We envision either an angelic self whose patience was stretched like an innocent victim on the rack, or a hideous ogre laying waste to a child's self-esteem. Which of those images is real? The answer is, all of them are real. And not just those extremes, but an infinite spectrum of images ranging from positive to negative. How can that be? For you to better understand why none of those versions of self is more or less real than the others, I'm going to have to shatter the outmoded understanding about the fundamental nature of reality and replace it with a new one. That sounds like a major undertaking, and in some ways it is. But I also know this. The most likely reason why you were drawn to this book is that your past efforts to make any lasting change in your life, physical, emotional, or spiritual, have fallen short of the ideal of yourself that you imagined. And why those efforts failed has more to do with your beliefs about why your life is the way it is than anything else, including a perceived lack of will, time, courage, or imagination. Always, in order to change, we have to come to a new understanding of self and the world so that we can embrace new knowledge and have new experiences. That's what reading this book will do for you. Your past shortfalls can be traced, at their root, to one major oversight. You haven't committed yourself to living by the truth that your thoughts have consequences so great that they create your reality. The fact is that we are all blessed. We can all reap the benefits of our constructive efforts. We don't have to settle for our present reality. We can create a new one, whenever we choose to. We all have that ability because, for better or worse, our thoughts do influence our lives. I'm sure you've heard that before, but I wonder whether most people really believe this statement on a gut level. If we truly embrace the notion that our thoughts produce tangible effects in our lives, wouldn't we strive to never let one thought slip by us that we didn't want to experience? And wouldn't we focus our attention on what we want instead of continually obsessing about our problems? Think about it. If you really knew that this principle were true, would you ever miss a day in intentionally creating your desired destiny? I hope this book will shift your view on how our world operates, convince you that you are more powerful than you knew, and inspire you to demonstrate the understanding that what you think and believe has a profound effect on your world. Until you break from the way you see your present reality, any change in your life will always be haphazard and transitory. You have to overhaul your thinking about why things happen in order to produce enduring and desired outcomes. To do that, you'll need to be open to a new interpretation of what is real and true. To help you shift into this mode of thought and begin to create a life of your choosing, I have to begin with a bit of cosmology, the study of the structure and dynamics of the universe. But don't be alarmed. We're merely going to skim through the Nature of Reality 101 and how some of our views about it have evolved to reach our present understanding. All of this is to explain, of necessity, in a brief and simple way, how it is possible that your thoughts shape your destiny. This chapter might test your willingness to abandon ideas that have in a sense been programmed into you for many years on a conscious and subconscious level. Once you gain a new conception of the fundamental forces and elements that constitute reality, it won't fit into that old perception in which the linear and the orderly rule the day. Be prepared to experience some fundamental shifts in understanding. In fact, as you begin to embrace this new outlook, your very makeup as a human being will change. It's my wish that you will no longer be the same person that you were when you began. Obviously, I'm about to challenge you, but I want you to know that I'm entirely empathetic because I too have had to let go of what I thought was true and leap into the unknown. To ease into this new way of thinking about the nature of our world, let's see how our worldview was shaped by the early belief that mind and matter were separate things. Connecting the dots between the outer physical world of the observable and the inner mental world of thought has always presented quite a challenge to scientists and philosophers. To many of us, even today, mind appears to have little or no measurable effects on the world of matter. Although we'd probably agree that the world of matter creates consequences affecting our minds, how can our minds possibly produce any physical changes affecting the solid things in our lives? Mind and matter appear to be separate. That is, unless there's a shift in our understanding about the way physical, solid things actually exist. Well, there has been such a shift, and to trace its beginnings, we don't have to go back very far. For much of what historians consider modern times, humanity believed that the nature of the universe was orderly, and thus predictable and explainable. Consider 17th century mathematician and philosopher René Descartes, who developed many concepts that still have great relevance to mathematics and other fields. Does "I think, therefore I am" ring any bells? In retrospect, however, one of his theories ultimately did more harm than good. Descartes was a proponent of the mechanistic model of the universe, a view that the universe is controlled by predictable laws. When it came to human thought, Descartes faced a real challenge. The human mind possessed too many variables to neatly fit into any laws. Since he couldn't unify his understanding of the physical world with that of the mind, but he had to account for the presence of both, Descartes played a nifty mind game, pun intended. He said that the mind was not subject to the laws of the objective physical world, so it was completely outside the bounds of scientific inquiry. The study of matter was the jurisdiction of science. Always matter, never mind. Whereas the mind was God's instrument, so the study of it fell to religion. Always mind, never matter. Essentially, Descartes started a belief system that imposed a duality between the concepts of mind and matter. For centuries, that division stood as the accepted understanding of the nature of reality. Helping to perpetuate Descartes' beliefs were the experiments and theories of Sir Isaac Newton. The English mathematician and scientist not only solidified the concept of the universe as a machine, but he produced a set of laws stating that human beings could precisely determine, calculate, and predict the orderly ways in which the physical world would operate. According to the classical Newtonian physics model, all things were considered solid. For example, energy could be explained as a force to move objects or to change the physical state of matter. But as you will see, energy is much more than an outside force exerted on material things. Energy is the very fabric of all things material and is responsive to mind. By extension, the work of Descartes and Newton established a mindset that if reality operated on mechanistic principles, then humanity had little influence on outcomes. All of reality was predetermined. Given that outlook, is it any wonder that human beings struggle with the idea that their actions mattered, let alone entertain the notions that their thoughts mattered, or that free will played any part in the grand scheme of things? Don't many of us still labor today, subconsciously or consciously, under the assumption that we human beings are often little more than victims? Considering that these cherished beliefs held sway for centuries, it took some revolutionary thought to counter Descartes and Newton. About 200 years after Newton, Albert Einstein produced his famous equation, E equals mc squared, demonstrating that energy and matter are so fundamentally related that they are one and the same. Essentially, his work showed that matter and energy are completely interchangeable. This directly contradicted Newton and Descartes, and ushered in a new understanding of how the universe functions. Einstein didn't single-handedly crumble our previous view of the nature of reality, but he did undermine its foundation, and that eventually led to the collapse of some of our narrow, rigid ways of thinking. His theories set off an exploration of the puzzling behavior of light. Scientists then observed that light sometimes behaves like a wave, when it bends around a corner, for example, and at other times it behaves like a particle. How could life be both a wave and a particle? According to the outlook of Descartes and Newton, it couldn't. A phenomena had to be either one or the other. Quickly, it became clear that the dualistic Cartesian-Newtonian model was flawed at the most basic level of all, the subatomic. Subatomic refers to the parts, electrons, protons, neutrons, and so on, that make up atoms, which are the building blocks of all things physical. The most fundamental components of our so-called physical world are both waves, energy, and particles, physical matter, depending on the mind of the observer. And we'll come back to that. To understand how the world works, we had to look to its tiniest components. Thus, out of these particular experiments, a new field of science was born called quantum physics. This change was a complete reimagining of the world we'd thought we'd lived in, and it led to the proverbial rug being pulled out from under our feet. Feet we used to think were planted on solid ground. How so? Well, think back to those old toothpick and styrofoam ball models of the atom. Before quantum physics came along, people believed that an atom was made of a relatively solid nucleus with smaller, less substantial objects either located in or around it. The very idea that with a powerful enough instrument we could measure, calculate the mass of, and count, number, the subatomic particles that make up an atom, made them seem as inert as cows grazing in a pasture. Atoms seem to be made of solid stuff, right? Refer to figure 1A, the classical atom. Well, nothing could be further from the truth as revealed by the quantum model. Atoms are mostly empty space. Atoms are energy. Think about this. Everything physical in your life is not solid matter. Rather, it's all fields of energy or frequency patterns of information. All matter is more nothing, energy, than something, particles. Refer to figure 1B, the quantum atom. Refer to figure 1C, the real quantum atom. But this alone wasn't enough to explain the nature of reality. Einstein and others had another puzzle to solve. Matter didn't always seem to behave in the same ways. When physicists began observing and measuring the tiny world of the atom, they noticed that at the subatomic level, the fundamental elements of the atom didn't obey the laws of classical physics the way that larger objects did. Events involving objects in the large world were predictable, reproducible, and consistent. When that legendary apple fell from a tree and moved towards the center of the Earth until it collided with Newton's head, its mass accelerated with a consistent force. But electrons, as particles, behaved in unpredictable, unusual ways. When they interacted with the nucleus of the atom and moved towards its center, they gained and lost energy, appeared and disappeared, and seemed to show up all over the place without regard to the boundaries of time and space. Did the world of the small and the world of the large operate under very different sets of rules? Since subatomic particles like electrons were the building blocks of everything in nature, how could they be subject to one set of rules, and the things they made up behave according to another set of rules? At the level of the electron, scientists can measure energy-dependent characteristics such as wavelength, voltage potentials, and the like. But these particles have a mass that is so infinitesimally small and exists so temporarily as to be almost non-existent. This is what makes the subatomic world unique. It possesses not just physical qualities, but also energetic qualities. In truth, matter on a subatomic level exists as a momentary phenomenon. It's so elusive that it constantly appears and disappears, appearing into three dimensions and disappearing into nothing, into the quantum field, in no space, no time, transforming from particle, matter, to wave, energy, and vice versa. But where do particles go when they vanish into thin air? Refer figure 1D, collapsing the wave function. Consider again that old-school toothpick and styrofoam ball model on how atoms were constructed. Back then, weren't we led to believe that electrons orbited about the nucleus like planets around the sun? If so, we could pinpoint their location, couldn't we? The answer is yes, in a manner of speaking. But the reason is not at all what we used to think. What quantum physicists discovered was that the person observing or measuring the tiny particles that make up atoms affects the behavior of energy and matter. Quantum experiments demonstrated that electrons exist simultaneously in an infinite array of possibilities, or probabilities, in an invisible field of energy. But only when an observer focuses attention on any location of any one electron does that electron appear. In other words, a particle cannot manifest in reality, that is, ordinary time-space as we know it, until we observe it. Quantum physics calls this phenomena collapse of the wave function, or the observer effect. We now know that the moment the observer looks for an electron, there is a specific point in time and space when all probabilities of the electron collapse into a physical event. With this discovery, mind and matter can no longer be considered separate. They are intrinsically related, because subjective mind produces measurable changes on the objective physical world. Are you beginning to see why this chapter is titled The Quantum You? At the subatomic level, energy responds to your mindful attention and becomes matter. How would your life change if you learned to direct the observer effect and to collapse infinite waves of probability into the reality that you choose? Could you get better at observing the life you want? So ponder this. Everything in the physical universe is made up of subatomic particles such as electrons. By their very nature, these particles, when they exist as pure potential, are in their wave state while they are not being observed. They are potentially everything and nothing until they are observed. They exist everywhere and nowhere until they are observed. Thus, everything in our physical reality exists as pure potential. If subatomic particles can exist in an infinite number of possible places simultaneously, we are potentially capable of collapsing into existence an infinite number of possible realities. In other words, if you can imagine a future event in your life based on any one of your personal desires, that reality already exists as a possibility in the quantum field, waiting to be observed by you. If your mind can influence the appearance of an electron, then theoretically, it can influence the appearance of any possibility. This means that the quantum field contains a reality in which you are healthy, wealthy, and happy, and possesses all of the qualities and capabilities of the idealized self that you hold in your thoughts. Stay with me, and you'll see that with willful attention, sincere application, and a new knowledge, and repeated daily efforts, you can use your mind as the observer to collapse quantum particles and organize a vast number of subatomic waves of probability into a desired physical event called an experience in your life. Like clay, the energy of infinite possibilities is shaped by consciousness, your mind. And if all matter is made of energy, it makes sense that consciousness, mind, in this case as Newton and Descartes called it, an energy, matter, according to the quantum model, are so intimately related that they are one. Mind and matter are completely entangled. Your consciousness, mind, has effects on energy, matter, because your consciousness is energy, and energy has consciousness. You are powerful enough to influence matter because at the most elementary level, you are energy with a consciousness. You are mindful matter. In the quantum model, the physical universe is an immaterial, interconnected, unified field of information. Potentially everything, but physically nothing. The quantum universe is just waiting for a conscious observer, you or me, to come along and influence energy in the form of potential matter by using the mind and consciousness, which are themselves energy, to make waves of energetic probabilities coalesce into physical matter. Just as the wave of possibility of the electron manifests as a particle within a specific momentary event, we observers cause a particle or groups of particles to manifest physical experiences in the form of events in our lives. This is crucial to understanding how you can cause an effect or make a change in your life. When you learn how to sharpen your skills of observation to intentionally affect your destiny, you are well on your way towards living the ideal version of your life by becoming the idealized version of yourself. Like everything else in the universe, we are, in a sense, connected to a sea of information in a dimension beyond physical space and time. We don't need to be touching or even close proximity to any physical elements in the quantum field to affect or be affected by them. The physical body is organized patterns of energy and information, which is unified with everything in the quantum field. You, like all of us, broadcast a distinct energy pattern or signature. In fact, everything material is always emitting specific patterns of energy, and this energy carries information. Your fluctuating states of mind consciously or unconsciously change that signature on a moment-to-moment basis, because you are more than just a physical body. You are a consciousness using a body and a brain to express different levels of mind. Another way to look at how we humans and the quantum field are interconnected is through the concept of quantum entanglement, or quantum non-local connection. Essentially, once two particles can be initially linked in some way, they will always be bonded together beyond space and time. As a result, anything that is done to one will be done to the other, even though they are spatially separated from one another. This means that since we too are made up of particles, we are all implicitly connected beyond space and time. Think about the implications of this. If you can wrap your mind around this concept, then you'd have to agree that the you that exists in a probable future is already connected to the you in this now, in a dimension beyond this time and space. Stay tuned. By the end of this book, that idea might just seem normal to you. Since we're all interconnected across distance and time, does this suggest that our thoughts and feelings can influence events in our past, as well as those we desire in our future? In July 2000, Israeli doctor Leonard Leibovici conducted a double-blind, randomized, controlled trial involving 3,393 hospital patients, divided into a control group and an intercession group. He set out to see whether prayer could have an effect on their condition. Prayer experiments are great examples of mind affecting matter at a distance. But stay with me here, because everything is not always what it seems. Leibovici selected patients who had suffered sepsis, an infection while hospitalized. He randomly designated half the patients to have prayers said for them, while the other half were not prayed for. He compared the results in three categories: how long fever lasted, length of hospital stay, and how many died as a result of the infection. The prayed for benefited from an earlier decrease in fever and a shorter hospitalization time. The difference in the number of deaths amongst the prayed for and not prayed for groups was not statistically significant, although better in the prayed for group. That's a powerful demonstration of the benefits of prayer and how we can send an intention out into the quantum field through our thoughts and feelings. However, there's one additional element to this story that you should know about. Did it strike you as slightly odd that in July 2000, a hospital would have more than 3,000 cases of infection at once? Was it a very poorly sterilized place? Or was some kind of contagion running rampant? Actually, those who were praying weren't praying for patients who were infected in 2000. Instead, unbeknownst to them, they were praying for lists of people who had been in the hospital from 1990 to 1996, 4 to 10 years prior to the experiment. The prayed-for patients actually got better during the 1990s from the experiment conducted years later. Let me say this another way. The patients who were prayed for in 2000 all showed measurable changes in health, but those changes took effect years before. A statistical analysis of this experiment proved that these effects were far beyond coincidence. This demonstrates that our intentions, our thoughts and feelings, and our prayers not only affect our present or future, but they can actually affect our past as well. Now this leads to the question, if you were to pray or focus on an intention for a better life for yourself, could it affect your past, present, and future? The quantum law says that all potentials exist simultaneously. Our thinking and our feeling affects all aspects of life beyond both space and time. Please note, throughout this book, I will refer interchangeably to your having and creating a state of being or a state of mind. For example, we could say that how you think and how you feel create a state of being. I want you to understand that when I use the terms state of being and state of mind, your physical body is a part of that state. In fact, as you'll see later on, many people exist in a state in which the body has become the mind, when they are ruled almost exclusively by the body and how it feels. So when I talk about the observer having an effect, it's not just the brain that is at work influencing matter, but the body as well. It is your state of being, when mind and body are one as an observer, which has effects on the external world. We communicate with the quantum field primarily through our thoughts and feelings. Since our thoughts are themselves energy, as you know, the electrical impulses the brain generates can easily be measured by devices such as an EEG. Before I go into greater detail on how this works, I want to share with you a remarkable study that demonstrates how our thoughts and feelings influence matter. Cellular biologist Glenn Rain, PhD, conceived a series of experiments to test healers' ability to affect biological systems. Since DNA is more stable than substances such as cells or bacterial cultures, he decided to have healers hold test tubes containing DNA. This study took place at the HalfMath Research Center in California. The folks there have conducted extraordinary research into the physiology of emotions, heart-brain interactions, and much more. Essentially, they and others have documented a specific link between our emotional states and our heart rhythms. When we have negative emotions, such as anger and fear, our heart rhythms become erratic and disorganized. In contrast, positive emotions, love and joy, for instance, produce highly ordered, coherent patterns that the HalfMath researchers refer to as heart coherence. In Dr. Rain's experiment, he first studied a group of 10 individuals who were well practiced in using techniques that HalfMath teaches to build heart-focused coherence. They applied the techniques to produce strong, elevated feelings such as love and appreciation. Then for 2 minutes, they held vials containing DNA samples suspended in deionized water. When those samples were analyzed, no statistically significant changes had occurred.